We're on to the 10:30 agenda item, the Enforcement Committee Report. It's behind tab 11. Rodney Abel is the chair of that committee. Lou Goudreau is the lead staff member. Whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We had a law enforcement, VMS enforcement meeting on April 3rd in Newburyport. You'll find a meeting action paper, yellow paper, under tab 11. It's enforcement VMS. Everything we did there, we were charged with looking at the running clock and sector enforcement. Everything we did there, the committee did by a consensus. And the first thing was the consensus of the VMS Enforcement Committee was that VMS could support the expansion of the running clock to other fisheries other than cod. That is, that it is technically feasible. The VMS Enforcement Committee recommends that the Council separately consider whether or not this expansion of the running clock should be done, and that it is outside the scope of the VMS committee. It should be turned over to the appropriate committee. Enforcement concerns cited in the past still exist. Enforcement will continue to encounter the same enforcement challenges, which will be increased if the running clock is expanded. One caveat is that the running clock should be expanded only to fisheries that require VMS, which should be used to declare the running clock. That was the first. The second one was another committee consensus that requires sectors to land all legal-sized fish. There was a consensus that it was not enforceable because there was not an adequate observation of discards at sea. A couple of advisors recommended changing this to marketable fish because all legal fish would end up as discards. We didn't take this as a consensus of the committee. Third was the committee consensus is that details on potential weighmasters, if such programs are adopted, might be paid. That should be left to each sector's operations plan, which should be reviewed for enforceability at that time. For instance, determining whether an independent contractor should charge by the hour or by the pound, the consensus of the committee, there was no preference on that. Sectors are responsible for documenting landings, but enforcement must continue to check individuals, trips, vessel trips. That was a committee consensus. It is a consensus of the committee that an independent contractor or weighmaster or the select sector itself monitors reporting accuracy. Then enforcement must also do this. Every sector vessel must have a power on and positioning at all times. That was a committee consensus. There was a concern that some language be needed to change if a sector is no longer on a day at sea, which is what requires VMS. To have a VMS unit on position at all times throughout the fishing year when assigned to a sector. Waymasters. Waymasters should validate dealer landings, but not actually weigh fish, unless necessary to accommodate ports without an adequate facility. That was a committee consensus. All landings should be observed, weighed, and documented at the first point of offloading or landing, including trucks. That was another committee consensus. Vessels should coordinate landing operations with the waymaster or dockside observer at least 6 hours or immediately upon completion of fishing if that boat is less than 6 hours from port prior to its landing via VMS. Hail weights must be required. Hail weights should be species specific, except on non-trip, non-tax species, which may include an overall catch estimate. A pre-landing form should include a VTR serial number. The pre-landing form should include a VTR serial number. This would allow enforcement to randomly monitor landings. The committee also received a request from the Portland Fish Exchange to allow vessels to unload in multiple ports. As this is outside of the scope of the VMS Enforcement Committee, a consensus of the committee is that the request be forwarded to the Council for consideration, perhaps through the Groundfish Committee. This may become a de facto increase of days at sea, because every boat will go to the nearest dealer that sells something and then steam to where they want to offload in the first place. The council should charge them for time, for instance, by stitching of days at sea. That's my report. Any questions?
Questions for Rodney? Anyone on the committee wish to elaborate or further discuss any of the points that the committee brought forward? Anyone in the audience? Okay, Rodney, so point number one, it appears that the VMS Enforcement Committee recommends that the running clock can be used in an FMP by FMP basis. In the discussion, was it recommended that that advice just be forwarded to specific committees that use days at sea for their consideration?
Yes, it was. We determined that it could be physically done through the VMS.
Okay.
Whether or not it should be done, we figured that was outside the scope of this committee. That it we should refer this back to the council, then the council should refer it to the appropriate committee.
Okay. I had another question. Number seven and number eight. When I combine those two, I take that to mean that the function of a waymaster is to certify the landings that will be weighed up by the respective dealer. Is that the proper way to look at it?
Yeah, waymaster was very confusing, Mr. Chairman, because everybody figures a waymaster is doing the weighing. And the committee suggested that it be a dockside inspector or something like that. Maybe waymaster should be taken out of there, because in the Canadian model, the people that observe the landings don't actually weigh the fish. It could be a dealer with a truck that brings his scale down there, and they just account for all the fish that are going onto the truck at the point of offloading.
So the waymaster certifies the weighing process.
Exactly.
Okay. And I was actually hoping for a little more background or discussion on number two. Basically, it appears that the committee does not see the validity in a total retention fishery. Is that right?
Well,
we didn't think validity was in our lane. We thought the question is it enforceable? And unless we can have people observing what's going on in fishing boats all the time, we didn't think it was enforceable. I think people are still going to discard some fish.
Okay.
Nobody will be there to see it. Is it a good idea? No, that's for the fishery management plans to decide.
Okay.
Enforcement-wise, we just didn't see it as being enforceable to require people to retain everything that they haul back. Whether or not it's a good idea is a different question. We just didn't think that was a question for the Enforcement Committee.
Fair point. Anyone else on the council? Dr. Pierce.
Yeah, Rodney, number four, sectors are responsible for documenting landings, but enforcement must continue to check individual vessels' trips. That's a committee consensus. Could you elaborate a bit as to how that particular position taken by the enforcement committee relates to the sector management comment that's in the enforcement analysis of Groundfish Amendment 13? That's the document number two in our package, where it says sector management poses certain enforcement and legal concerns. In general, NIMS law enforcement does not support sector management. I didn't realize that. However, more details are required to make an informed decision. So did your committee discuss that particular point? And if you did it in some way influence that conclusion you drew, that number four?
Yeah, I'm not sure where you're reading from. I don't have that in front of me, but from my recollection of that, when we talked about the enforcement of sector managing their own, we couldn't leave it just up to the sectors. That enforcement would have to verify it or check on them if they chose to.
Okay. Thank you. I would appreciate it, Mr. Chairman, if the statement I just read is actually the position of NIMS law enforcement. Again, in general, NIMS law enforcement does not support sector management. Is that an official position of NIMS law enforcement?
Andy Cohen, please.
Hi. Thanks for the question. The difficulty that we see with sector enforcement is a number of different rules that apply to a number of different subsets within the population of the industry that may not be consistent. If sectors are developed in a way that an agent can easily detect a violation or verify that a violation has not taken place, then we're okay with it. What we are afraid of is that we're going to be spread very thin, doing a variety of different tasks that are not cannot be applied to all of the sectors, and that's going to weaken enforcement. So, to say that we are not supportive of sectors is a bit more of a broad statement than I'd like to make. But for lack of a better way to put it, you know, we're very concerned about how we're going to apply our resources to the enforcement of sectors.
Is that to say that a number of unique exemptions from sector to sector complicates your job? But if that...
No, why couldn't I have said it that way?
That's
exactly right.
That's what you mean?
Yes.
Okay.
And, Mr. Chairman... While I have the floor, can I just say one thing about the proposal to land lobsters in one port and then groundfish in another port in Maine? Whereas the committee does not think that it was within our purview to address that directly, I had a conversation with Maine Marine Patrol yesterday, and landing lobsters in one port and then going back to Maine with the rest of the catch is contrary to Maine state law. And Maine Marine Patrol indicated that they may choose to prosecute that under Maine state law if that is the case. So I just wanted to pass that on.
Dr. Pierce, I think you had some more.
Yeah, obviously we put a lot of time into sector management. Enforcement's concerns are critical. And now that you've address this issue, it would be helpful to the council to have something perhaps more formal that would give, in particular, the Groundfish Committee more guidance as to what should not be done to complicate matters for enforcement, because clearly enforcement will be key. At least that's the way I see it. And that would be my request, Mr. Chairman, that Andy, you provide something to the committee that would give us additional guidance. so we don't create a situation that will be objected to by law enforcement.
Yes. Thank you.
Okay, unless there's objection from the council, we'll ask NIMS Enforcement to provide the council with a more formal perspective on, from their perspective, the challenges of sector management. Okay. Jim Odlin.
Yeah, Rodney, I would like to follow up on number two. As the chairman stated, right now we have a couple of sectors that are, it's illegal to discard legal-sized fish. And I'm wondering, and it's been going on for, what now, we've been 3 years into the sector program, and I was wondering why we didn't know about this when we first approved sectors, that there was a question about monitoring discards. And, you know, what can we do about that now? Because we have two sectors in existence, not even talking about future sectors, that their rules are that they can't discard legal-sized fish. That's one of the fundamental issues with the sector. So what can we do about that? Or maybe you want to take it back to the committee.
We had that discussion, and why we decided that it was unenforceable, why it was a consensus, was because if somebody was bumping up to their tack on one fishery and it was going to close down the sector, that they could do that. And there was no way, unless they had 100% observers, that we could monitor that. And that's why we brought that concern up, that it wasn't enforceable by law enforcement without 100% observer coverage.
I had Tom Hill to that point, and Tom Neese.
I would just hope the council eventually would take this up as a policy issue. I'm not sure it's irrelevant whether it's fully enforceable or not. There are lots of regulations that we have that are not easily enforced, but they're necessarily either morally or technically correct. And I would argue that regardless of whether we think that this issue is 100% enforceable, that it is one of the core issues in the fishery today as to whether we're shoveling over or discarding either legal or sublegal fish, and we're discarding our future.
I tend to agree with you, Tom. Tom Neese?
Yeah. I think the committee needs to be careful about how to interpret this number two. When you look at this from an enforcement perspective, I think the issue is, can the enforcement agency identify who is discarding legal-sized fish and when that happens? Because that's what they need in order to prosecute somebody. And the only way, as they pointed out, they can do that is if there's a very high level or nearly 100% observer coverage. But from a management perspective, your needs may be slightly different, and you may still decide that this is something you want to consider. The question for managers is really not necessarily can you identify if it's going on an individual basis, but can you detect these events if they're happening at a high enough rate that they could be impacting somebody's quota? And the answer to that may be different than the answer to this question. And I will point out, just as an example of how that might be, you actually have a presentation in your binders in Groundfish that we put in there, not specifically related to this. It was in response to a question at the last council meeting. But the Canadians have a provision on George's Bank where they prohibit discards of cod, discards of any fish in their quota-managed fisheries. And they suspected that discarding was going on when their observed trips weren't observed. Sassafras. And so they actually were able to do an analysis which proved fairly well that discarding was in fact occurring by looking at catch composition, and they actually made an adjustment in their catches to account for this unobserved discarding. So, you know, that clearly isn't good enough for you to take an enforcement action against somebody, but it may be good enough for you to adjust your management measures or to adjust what you think someone has caught in that manner. So, you know, there may be ways to use this provision that aren't good enough for enforcement but maybe good enough for managers.
Thanks, Tom. Frank Blount and Jim Salisbury.
Yeah, I have to agree with Tom Hill and Tom Neese on that. I mean, drinking and driving is against the law. We don't have a cop in every car saying you can't drink and drive. So, I mean, it's the same. We don't observe everybody. We don't. But, I mean, it's still the right thing to do. And I think in this case, it's, you know, if that's what the sectors want, that's the right way to go. Because you can't have 100% enforceability. But I think it is the right thing to do.
Jim Salisbury.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Two things. First, I would reiterate my agreement with Tom and Frank on the last point. I think that the Tom Neese made a good point that the issue isn't just, it's not a matter of whether we catch somebody discarding. That isn't the objective. It's whether we can prevent discarding as much as possible and then take it into account if it is occurring. Secondly, I'd like to ask some questions on item 10 again. While I understand Andy Cohen's comments regarding the Maine Marine Patrol, I don't think that's necessarily the entire issue. I think the question I have, and I thought that was sent to the Enforcement Committee to look at, is there any reason why somebody could not land within, you know, their catch within two or three different places? For example, if you wanted to land your cutfish in one place but then take all of your haddock out someplace else. I think there's an obvious concern that trip limit species or things like that would have to be landed at the first landing port. I can see, I can understand that. But once that's done, what's to prevent somebody from taking other species to a port that may provide a better opportunity for them, especially if they're close by? For example, Gloucester and Boston, the new auction in Boston. And so, while I understand that, you know, there is a focus, the lobster issue is one thing, but it seems to me it applies really to fish as well. And the difference between the trip limited species and other species, I think, is worth exploring. I didn't fully understand why the comment was made at the end of that is, I quote it here, this may become a de facto increase in days at sea because every boat will go to the nearest dealer that's selling something and then steam to where they want to offload in the first place. I don't see why that necessarily has to create another day at sea or additional days at sea. Once you're in the demarcation line, if you have VMS and are not fishing, can you not transport legally caught fish to someplace else?
The way I understand it is if you land, you're supposed to offload. Once you sail out with fish on board, you're not supposed to do that. You're supposed to offload. Because
I understand what the present law is. The question was, is there any reason why that it would be unenforceable to, in fact, make it legal to go from one port to the other? I mean, it isn't. I understand it's not legal now, but if it were legal, what would be the reason why you should not do that from an enforcement perspective?
Well, right off the top of my head is you'd have to be checked in both ports. If I went into Gloucester, you'd have to have an agent check you there. If you took off your codfish and you had your trip limits, anything with a trip limit, and you left from there, you'd have to be checked again in a second port.
Well, checked in the same way that you're checked now. You're unloaded. Your dealer gives you a slip and verifies what you unloaded there. You're not necessarily checked by an enforcement agent every time you land, and they look at what you have. You know, the dealer reports would be, you would have to have a dealer report in each place. Certainly you would do that, and your trip would reflect that. But is there a reason other than is there a reason why that wouldn't be sufficient to account for the entire catch from an enforcement perspective?
Well, that was one concern. The other concern was the way the days at sea was allocated at the beginning. And there was concern by the committee, some members of the committee, that would actually decrease if your trip stopped at the first port of unload, That would either, that could, you could go, say, for example, Nantucket. I could offload a box of fish in Nantucket, then steam another 8 hours to New Bedford. So I would save that on sailing time, where your sailing time is calculated from New Bedford and back to New Bedford. That was the main concern of that.
Andy, did you want to add to this? I saw your hand go up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That's a good question, and the reason that we do not want to allow partial offloads is because of the potential of, for lack of a better term, smuggling. If a person offloads in one port and then goes to another port, that's a pinch point that we would, that's an opportunity that we would lose to do a total audit of the offload, and it gives a segment of the population an opportunity to hide what they've got on board, and it's as simple as that.
Pat Corporal. Dave Gaethel.
Yeah, a couple points. One was to the issue of the of number two there that we were discussing earlier. I think the committee also recognized that the solution to this problem lies in the sector management plan itself and the operations plan, that it contained very strong sanctions for anybody caught discarding fish, something to the order of they're shut down for the rest of the year automatically, something like that. And then if the sector management plan has the appropriate language in it, that it'll be somewhat self-enforcing. I mean, the sector as a group doesn't want to get shut down because they have some guy who discards fish. So, you know, the problem can be dealt with at that level, and that's really going to be more effective than trying to provide 100% coverage. You know, there are a number of ways to detect people discarding fish. It can be done from the air, from the sea, from whatever, by other boats. The most effective means is your fellow fisherman. You know, if your neighbor's pissed that you're throwing things over, you know, he's going to rat you out because he doesn't want to get shut down. And so I think that's the solution to that. And my second point was I'd like to make a motion to number one to get something up on the board for discussion, if that's acceptable, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, Dave.
Karen, could you put up? I'll read it into the record while it's going up on the board. That the council requests that the necessary changes be made in the groundfish plan to allow for one extra trip limit of cod to be landed through VMS declaration effective with the next VMS software change. And I believe, I don't know if Bill Semro's here or not today, but I believe he indicated that was going to occur in June of this year.
Before we have debate, is there a second? Seconded by Mike Leary. Dave, did you want to add anything else?
Yeah, in the way of explanation, in discussion with Nero staff, it's been made apparent that it's more than just a VMS change that needs to be done. There are some wording changes that would need to occur. They can speak to that better than I can, but this would allow that to occur as well. There is about a 60-day period, Bill Semro indicated, necessary for the VMS software vendors to make this software change. And the reason that we're requesting this is, quite frankly, it's for a number of reasons. It mirrors what's already going on the grounds. It's going to save a lot of fuel because people won't have to stay out there for 24 hours in a minute with their engines running. And it's going to save a lot of fish, quite frankly. If you catch your cod in the first hour and a half of a trip, and you've got to spend the next 24 hours out there anyway, you drive around all over the place trying to find a place to catch something else other than cod. And at least in my experience, all you do is end up throwing more cod over. You don't catch much of anything else in my area anyway. You know, you might get another couple of boxes. You barely pay for the fuel to tow for the rest of the time. I would rather have these people import off the water. They're going to get charged the appropriate amount of time, 24 hours if they're in the 1-to-1 counting, 48 hours if they're in the 2-to-1 counting. I just think it'll be a better situation all around. If you can get people to trade 20 hours of towing time for 2 days worth of fish, the resource in general is a lot better off. The reason I made it only specific to cod is that the cod are what are kind of ubiquitous. They're more or less everywhere. Yellowtail, you can avoid by not towing in certain places. They seem to be rather clearly delineated. The same with some of the other species with trip limits on them. So that's the reason the motion is worded the way it is.
Dave, not to the intent or merits of the motion, but more to the process. I think it's more appropriate that this motion would be made to direct the committee to consider doing this, as opposed to the council making the decision right now that this will be done in the next action.
You mean send it to the groundfish committee?
Correct.
I don't have a problem with that. I was just trying to catch this June 1st VMS upgrade that's about 60 days away. And if we go to the committee, then we got to wait for the next upgrade, which might not be for I don't really know how long. The full council's got to make a decision on it anyway. So.
All right.
That was the reason anyway.
Bill, Semro, could we anticipate another VMS upgrade prior to Amendment 16? May of 2009.
I was going to ask you that.
Okay.
It's true that we have the next software change coming out June 1. I can't tell you right here and now, John, whether or not we could incorporate something like this into that change. Maybe.
Yeah.
The vendors have the specs for the June 1 change for Amendment 11. Might be able to incorporate it. If I may, I'm a little unclear about what that says. My interpretation is I thought the issue at the VMS Enforcement Committee had to do with vessels that want to land 2 days' trip limits of cod in less than 1 day. I think that's the issue, because there is a cod running clock right now. You know, as you know, if you're out there for longer than a day, day and a minute, you're charged 2 days. You have to send that form. So you can land 2 days fish, you're charged 48 hours. So I think the issue here is we want to modify the cod running clock to allow vessels to come in on a VMS trip that's less than 24 hours. They send the cod running clock before they cross the demarc line coming home, and they're charged 48 hours. Right now, the days at sea charging system in the regional office does not accommodate that. It could. VMS and days at sea technically can do it.
Pat Kirkle.
It doesn't matter whether the VMS accommodates it or not, and I think it's unfortunate that was the focus of the enforcement committee. This would require a regulatory change, and our position hasn't changed on the running clock, which, you know, we've had this conversation, 6,000 times maybe? 6,002? The only thing that the enforcement committee said was it's technically feasible. Well, it is technically feasible, and that's what Bill is saying. But that has nothing to do with our original objections, and it doesn't have anything to do with how the regulations currently read, which would not allow this.
Frank Bump, you're all set. Anyone else? Jim Audlin.
I don't know if this is a little off track, but I'd like to ask the service, and I don't know if it's Pat or Tom or somebody that... I'm a little confused. If you are in the 2-for-1 area and you catch 2 days' worth of cod and you stay out 24 hours in 1 minute, I'm just hearing them say you're charged 48 hours.
That's right. 48
so you're charged,
15 minutes.
You're charged 48 hours for 2 days' worth of cod. That's not 2-for-1. I mean, I think that's undermining the 2-for-1 that we thought this area was. In other words, if you're bringing in 1 day's of cod, you're supposed to be charged 2 days. If you're bringing in 2 days of cod, you're supposed to be charged 4 days. And if it's being enforced 24 hours in 1 minute, then it's not 2-for-1.
Yes, it
and it hasn't been since we started this. Thank you.
Tom Neese.
I want to speak directly to Jim's question, if that's okay. This was an issue that came up during the development of Framework 42 after the council vote and before submission. And we went back and forth with the regional office a number of times on how to deal with the two-for-one counting and the days at sea clock. And the way it's implemented is exactly it's the way it's written in the framework. And I don't have any of the charts with me, but, you know, we went through a number of scenarios, and the question is, okay, do you charge somebody 96 hours for the time for going 25 hours, or do you charge them 48? And a long story short is we wrote in that, you know, they get charged the 48 for the 25 plus 1 minute. They get charged 48. So it's implemented exactly the way it was in the framework, the way it's written in the framework.
Rep. Cunningham.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have some concerns about the motion on a procedural basis. And thinking about it, I think there may be some other impacts that this potentially could cause. And I think that those are some things that ought to be thought about by staff and the Groundfish Committee. So as it currently stands, I would have to oppose it.
I'll go back to my original comment. I do think it's more appropriate for this motion to direct the committee to take this information and consider it.
Let me ask the seconder if he agrees to go change it to the committee then. That the council requests the committee discuss the necessary changes to be made.
You want them to consider the changes that might need to be made, right?
Right.
Okay.
Consider, discuss. I don't know how you want to word it.
Okay. And I'll just suggest beyond that that I don't think we need to have a tremendous amount of discussion anymore on this issue. The committee will
under this scenario, we don't need any more discussion.
Okay. Anything further? Pat Kirkle.
We've got a lot to do in this amendment, and we've spent a lot of time in the past talking about the running clock. I don't think we have time to waste another Groundfish Committee meeting on discussing it again.
Anything further? Dave?
In response here, I mean, I don't even see this as part of an amendment. I understood this to be language change within the existing regulations. It didn't require an amendment, a framework, anything. It just required that text be brought up to be consistent if the council approves it. And quite frankly, if we don't do something to get these people to stop having to run their engines for all this time, you won't have to wait till the next amendment because they aren't going to be here. Fuel is $4 a gallon, $4.16, I think Rodney told me this morning. To have an engine running out there, even if it's only burning 5 gallons an hour, trying to stay warm for 20 hours when you could be tied up at a dock is patently absurd when you're catching the same amount of fish anyway. The fish are going to get killed either way. This actually saves fish because it stops you from going out there trying to catch something else because you're already being charged for the time. If people want to go home and donate all that time to the cause, we ought to be encouraging it.
Gene.
I don't think this is something that could be changed by a software modification. As Pat suggested, it has to be at least a regulatory change, and I believe it probably has to be a framework because I think the modified running clock, which Amendment 13 continued, was adopted as a FMP measure and not as a secretarial enforcement measure.
Anything further? Ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. Eight. Opposed? Motion carries 8-4. And one abstention. Anything further on the enforcement report? Any council member wishing to make a motion or ask any more questions concerning the report? Okay. We'll adjourn for lunch. Be back here at 1:00.